It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis is here. Stacey Higginbotham, too. We're going to talk a lot about this new plan for Facebook, a complete pivot. What is Mark Zuckerberg thinking? And can it possibly work? Then we're going to make Roadie for everybody and FedEx you one. And we'll talk about the latest news from Google. It's all, yeah, a little bit of that, too. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 498, recorded Wednesday, March 6th, 2019. Former TV Guide critic. This Week in Google is brought to you by On Deck. Are you a small business owner in need of capital today? Well, OnDeck can help. With over $10 billion in loans and an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau, OnDeck is a lender you can trust. Find out more at ondeck.com/twig. And by CashFly. Give your users the seamless online experience they want. Power your site or app with CashFly's CDN and be 30% faster than the competition. Learn more at twit.cashfly.com. And by Aftershocks. Unbelievably comfortable open-ear headphones. Hear music and crystal-clear phone calls like never before. Visit twig.aftershocks.com and use the code TWIG for $50 off the tech bundle. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google, the show where we talk about, well, I don't know if there's any really rhyme or reason about what we're going to talk about this week, but at least we have our A-team on deck. Stacey Higginbotham is here from Stacey on IoT via Austin, Texas. You're going to be leaving that fine People's Republic of Austin soon, I suppose.
Not for a few months. We've got 3 months left.
Okay. When do you move out of the house?
April 15th.
Yikes. So your buyer is so far so good.
Yes. She's actually been having vendors over for the last forever.
This is exciting.
Yeah,
that's exciting.
She's like committing.
She can't wait to move in. That's great.
Yeah, she is excited.
Also joining us, he's in Boston this week, former TV Guide critic Jeff Jarvis. Oh, poor Jeff. He's the...
Not gonna live that down.
No, much more dignified Leonard Tau Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism. The City University of New York, but MSNBC couldn't fit that in the lower third. They apparently didn't have the technology we have, so they called him when he appeared on MSNBC yesterday with Katie Tour, former TV Guide critic, which is about as, I mean, and blogger. I mean, that's about as low as you can go.
And sometimes tweeter. Yes.
Oh, wait, no, podcaster. That's as low as
you can go. Oh, yeah, that's true. Blogger's a step above podcaster. Hey, not anymore. Podcasts are hot. Don't you know that?
They are. I put in four things in the rundown. Podcast news.
Podcast. There's tons of podcast news.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
We have a special guest in the studio.
I'm so excited.
The Roadie Matic is here.
I think I deserve credit. Credit for introducing the Roadie Matic to the show.
This is...
Okay, to the show, but... But I knew about it when you introduced it.
She knew about it already. I knew about that.
I beat you.
And then I brought a video to the show, and I tasted the rotis, and I told Leo he had to try it.
This was this a Kickstarter or something?
It
very odd thing to do.
No, so the two founders, they just wanted a way to eat rotis without having to do it. Like having to make them every day. There you go.
The old-fashioned way.
The old-fashioned way. Because it is hard to puff them up properly and whatnot.
Yeah.
I think it's a husband and wife team. But
one of the founders wrote in on LinkedIn his story. He said, there's an automated way to wash clothes, make bread, and wash dishes. Why can't there be one to make roadies? And that's when I'm hearing myself.
How'd you get reverb on?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Hello.
I was about to say.
That was when the spark first lit.
He was doing his Yoda before, folks.
He was a mechanical engineer, worked in robotics, and so it's actually quite complicated.
It's super complicated.
Should we make some roadie?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Can you make some naan and some pita too?
I think any flatbread, right, Stacy?
You could make any flatbread, and they're adapting for different recipes. So it gets constant updates with new flours and that sort of thing.
It has an LED on it. It says starting up. And then I open the tray, and then the little Rodimatic pusher is getting ready to do its thing. You can see in the top there is a canister for flour, water, and oil, right? I think that third one is oil.
Mm-hmm.
And
that is
it. It says set preferences, tap play. So first thing I have to do is decide.
Play?
Hey, you know, it's instant. How many rotis do I want to make?
My washing machine says play.
Four? All right. We're going to make the maximum number. It says 0 out of 4. How do I?
That is, okay, you've got it making 4. It just hasn't made it yet.
Oh, I get it. So it's going to make 4. I can choose the thickness, the roast level, how much oil, and then I press, yes, play. Do you want to start making roti? You bet. It is now, it says, I'm a learning machine, and I'm adapting during the first few rotis. Your roti will get even better with time.
This is so cool.
That means it's sending your data to the cloud. Is it cool, Jeff?
Well, my Brody privacy has been breached.
Brody panic.
I'm not saying, I'm just pointing out. Everyone's like, oh, that's so cool. I'm like, yeah, but
now something's lowering. It's kind of noisy. Because it's like a 3D printer. I mean,
go into the, like, so when I shot my roadie video, it go into that side thing because you can actually
look in the window.
It. Yeah, look in the little window. You can see it making the balls.
Carol Merrill is opening the door now. And so this is the kneading device. So right now it's a mixing together oil, water, and flour. They sent us some special kind of Indian whole wheat. That is, I guess, popular for roti making. And now, in a minute, it's going to pop a little ball out, right?
Ball of dough out, yes.
Ball of dough. And it's going to knead it on that thing. Feels like, is it stuck?
It takes a minute. It's got to warm up and do all kinds of things.
Oops, my side door seems to be open. We just have to peer in the window.
Yeah, I think it wouldn't like that. Yeah.
No, it's because it could fire roti balls across the room. That would not be good. Warming up, 5 minutes remaining. Well, we'll come back.
Yeah,
I think
we'll come back to it.
Because I also got something else today.
Well, wait, you should tell people. Do you want to tell people how much it is before they get too excited?
It's $1,000. But it's got to be selling like crazy because if you go to the Rodimatic site, they say how many rotis have been made, and it's millions. Let's go see what the current Rodimatic roti count is. Oh, did they stop doing the count? Oh, they
did?
Well,
privacy. You know,
maybe
GDPR
I'm not on the
probably didn't allow it.
Yeah, right. Oh, no, here it is. 43,746,079 rotis. And look at
yours will be there soon.
It'll be right in there. See how fast? It's like a roti a second is being made right now. So I figure they've sold a few.
Oh,
is something happening? No, that's just.
I saw the video. Yeah,
you thought it was real. But as soon as it comes out, we'll cut away to
when the ball drops.
It's kind of like I feel like Walter Cronkite. We're on hold with the roti maker, but as soon as the roti comes into the chamber, we will cut away to the Rotimatic.
Today is the 30th anniversary of his last television broadcast.
Today is the 30th anniversary of Uncle Walter's last broadcast. Is it?
He graduated from the University of Texas.
Yeah, it's funny. It seems like it's longer ago than 30 years. That was his last CBS Evening News?
Yes.
With Walter Cronkite. I interviewed him after he retired. He was into sailing. And he had done a beautiful, I hear something, coffee table book of sailing and sailing ships. He was really great.
All your action's going to be in that side window. There.
That side window. Yeah, Anthony's waiting to peer in. I got half the staff.
And then after it gets dough, after it needs the dough, yeah. It's going to pop it into that front area.
So can you open? Can you have the door open?
No,
can't. You have to just enjoy it from afar.
Because then you get, dirt and stuff. But you'll be able to, I videoed through the window.
So do you think it's home users, or I bet you it's restaurants mostly that buys them?
No, it's got to be home users. There's a very strong, I mean, it's a pretty big limit. No, home users.
I wonder whether there's a Roadie-matic at Google.
Oh, yeah. That's where you put it.
How many friends do you have?
Quite a few.
They make rotis all the time.
I've made roti. I've made roti. Yeah. I've made naan. You make it in this cast iron skillet.
Stacey, define the difference between the various flatbreads. A roti is characterized as what versus a naan versus a
pork. I feel like roti is the generic.
It's the roti is the tortilla. Naan is like a focaccia. It's a naan is thicker.
It's much thicker. And how? What is okay. Compare a roti to a chapati. Chapati is a roti.
Are crispy.
They are rotis.
Yeah, it's like a crisp. It's like a tortilla versus a tortilla chip.
So roti
is a tortilla chip.
Roti are flatbread, then.
Yeah, they're like tortillas.
Yeah. But
they're Indian tortillas.
Whereas,
well, the naan that I made, you let it rise, and so it's puffier, and
so
you
cook
it.
Watch when the Roti-matic, it'll actually puff up. You want your roti to puff.
Yes.
So you get some air and lightness in there.
Okay. I'm a big naan fan. I presume I can make naan with this. Or maybe not. Maybe it's got to be flatter.
I think you can. No, I think we determined before you can make lots of different things. You can make little pizzas.
They do. I think it's only flatbread right now.
But it has a thickness setting. So
you can make roti, puri, pizza.
You can make puris now?
Puris, it says. Yeah.
Those are fried. Aren't those, or what am I thinking of?
I think you're right. Maybe you take it out and fry it. Maybe it just makes the puri.
My favorite Indian bread product are idlis.
You know, the sad irony is I picked a terrible day to give up carbohydrates.
I forgot about this.
The sad irony of this is it's going to make something I can't eat, but that's life.
You can send it to me.
Oh. As a matter of fact, I have a Federal Express envelope waiting.
Just see if it fits.
To go out. And I'll mail one to you too, Jeff, if you want.
Okay. I doubt that it has any gluten-free.
We'll overnight it.
Yeah.
No, there's definitely gluten in this one. So the other thing I got, maybe more germane to Twig, is the Galaxy S10 Plus has arrived. I was surprised. I didn't expect it to get it this soon. And it came with the buds, which are kind of cute. And if you look at it, this is basically a. There you go. You can see it. It's basically the same size, a little smaller than the Note 9. You can see the hole punch for the cameras. And the thing that's interesting about the S10, it has three cameras on the back, kind of wide, medium, and telephoto. And this, by the way, this is the ceramic back. So, what if you decide to spend as much money as possible on this thing? How high could you go? So this has a terabyte of storage. Plus I put a card in there. So more than a terabyte of storage. It has 12 gigs of RAM. It's the highest, spec'd Samsung Galaxy 10. And it has a ceramic back. They have white and black ceramic backs. But I'll show you you want to see the fingerprint reader in action. So you see it puts a little thing on the front there. This is not an optical fingerprint reader or capacitive like on the old Samsung phones. It's a, let's keep it awake. Well, actually, I guess I don't have to because you can see the little thing there. It's ultrasound. So in theory.
Whoa, cool.
Is it unlocked? No match. Oh, we're going to have to interrupt this with a very important message from Roadie-matic. I heard something.
I saw the little thing. Yeah, it's
something
happening.
Going in. It's,
you
it's happening.
Zoom in on that window.
Zoom in on the window. Come on, Anthony.
Ooh, it's moving.
Is a ball? Is it kneading?
Is the ball in there yet?
I don't know. This is
moving.
There are so many parts in this thing. This is so complicated, and it sounds, frankly.
Here it comes, yes. So what happens, the ball is going to form right there.
Okay, what's going on? I don't know.
So it's
okay, there's the flour.
So there's your dough.
Oh, so it's mixing. Yeah. Okay, so most of that weight was probably just getting the element to heat up so it could cook it, right? So it's mixing the dough. It's adding now probably the water and oil. Mixing. Yeah, see, there you go. Now it's going to knead it. And it's going to turn it into...
It spends a lot on... It takes a long... Not a long time, but it's kind of crazy to watch it.
So we're going to make four. But does it have to do this each time? I guess it does.
It does. It does it individually.
So really, if you had a family of four, you'd be waiting quite a while for everybody to get a roti.
Once it's warmed up, I think it's one roti per minute.
A roti a minute. Okay.
Okay.
So...
It takes longer than that for me to, you know, make waffles in my waffle oven.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of
Yeah. And so would you like have an Indian dinner and then make roti, a fresh roti? That would be kind of fun, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. And certainly it's an attraction for all.
And you can make tortillas with it.
Yeah, that wasn't on your list, Leo, right? Tortillas.
But I think you can. Now, Anthony, how hard is this to clean? It's got a special roti cleaning stick it comes with.
It's all the compartments are dishwasher safe.
Oh, so you can take it apart.
So you're
you
supposed
can
to pull them out.
Wash it. Okay.
I'm sorry, Anthony. Would you like to answer this?
Oh, look at that.
See?
There's the ball. We lost a little dough on the side there. Now. Oh.
Okay, now go to the front. Go to the front.
No,
go
quick.
To the front.
Switch to the front. Here it comes. It's going to come out of the front, Anthony.
Go.
Switch to the toaster cam. Anthony's a perfectionist. He didn't want to move while we were on him.
No. You got to go down so you can see what's happening. So it's going to pull this guy up.
This is good. I don't even think MSNBC could give you this kind of coverage.
There.
Oh, there it is.
And now.
Is that heated?
It's going to hang out there. It's heating it right now, and it's going to. This is the puffing.
This is the puffing?
This is where it's
How does it puff it?
Up.
Is it with heat? It puffs it? Or
it's heat.
It's just the heat.
I don't know.
Would you call this?
Meanwhile, it's kneading number two, right?
Yes, it's kneading number two as it's cooking number one. So that's why it's going to get to one a minute.
See,
oh, look,
see,
it's puffing up.
It start puffing.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, there it goes, and it goes whoosh.
Do you think this is? Would this categorize as artificial intelligence? Artificial baking.
No, because it doesn't learn. Well, it says it learns, actually.
This isn't actually doing.
Oh, my God. It's beautiful. Puff. Look at that.
Oh.
Oh, how do you feel?
Now, quick, before it cools off, we're going to pop it in this Federal Express bag.
What?
Okay, quick. Give it to the courier. Okay.
You'll be getting that tomorrow morning. Stacy, and I'll do one for Jeff, too. That's fresh. You can't get any fresher than that. Sealed. Fresh.
I can't wait.
I was supposed to use the tongs. I apologize, but my hands are clean.
That's okay. I'm sure my FedEx truck and...
Okay, here comes another one. Here comes another one. Another roti is about to emerge. So
what is speedy
get me
now?
Jerry, would you get me another FedEx bag? We got to send one to Jeff as well. And then since we're making four, we'll give our studio audience, all of you, you get a roti, and you get a roti, and you, and you, and you, and you get a roti. Everybody.
It's Oprah. Oprah roti.
Okay, there's two people in the audience. Now you're busted. Busted. Okay. Quick, get me that bag. This roti's about to emerge. It's getting puffed. It's getting puffed. I don't want it to get stale. Oh, here we go. Okay, we got the FedEx bag. All right. Okay.
I do love how it looks like an actual printer. You're like,
it sounds like a printer. It sounds like a 3D printer. Yeah. This thing has got whirring and clicking and buzzing. It reminds me when I was a kid and there was a book. Remember this book about? Do you ever read your daughter a book about a donut making machine? It's like Bartholomew McCubbins or something. Here it comes. Very exciting. Very exciting. This is yours, Jeff. That's got your name written all over it.
Oh, it's beautiful. I think I see the face of Jesus in it.
I was going to say Mary or Jesus. Oh, Jeff, you got tongs.
You got the tongs.
Whoa.
Seal that up. All right.
Nice.
Okay. There it is. Going to the courier.
I think we made FedEx.
Your delivery window.
And then the next two are for you. Okay. Yeah, just wheel that off.
Yeah, we need a
They should ask why they're the second, you know, because really they should have gotten the first ones and options really for the next ones that came out.
No, because you're the hosts, and I wanted you to have the freshest.
Elitism. Privilege.
Freshest.
There we go.
Anyway, I just got this Samsung, so I really can't do a review. The fingerprint, everybody has said, is not as fast as a capacitive fingerprint, but it does work. It also has Face ID, which works. And, you know, if you really, if it all breaks down, you can go back to the old Android, you know, dot pattern. And
is it better front or back for the fingerprint, you think, in the end?
I never liked it in I liked how Pixel did it, but I never liked how Samsung did it. Because if you look at the, this is a Note 9. And if you look at where the fingerprint reader is on the Note 9, it's a little bit better than the Note 8, which was right next to the camera. But it's close to the camera. And so it's not ideal. And if it's on the charging stand or on its back, you have to pick it up to unlock it. So I think it's a better spot. But I think this the ultrasonic technology is it's pretty early. Nevertheless, beautiful screen. I mean, you could see that immediately. Where is it? There it is. Beautiful screen.
That is pretty.
Yeah.
Is that Lake Louise?
I believe it is, in beautiful Banff.
Okay.
It's very snappy, as you can see. In fact,
yes.
It's the kind of thing where you just keep hitting stuff until it calms down a little bit. It feels pretty fast. So the next thing I'm going to do is try to fill up a terabyte of storage, which means I probably can get every audiobook I've ever purchased since the year 2000. Plus every song I own digitized on here, which makes this kind of fun.
What about, why would you not use video? You could get...
I can also use video. I can fill it up faster. Well, that's been certainly my goal.
Here's all security nows.
So I can... actually, I shouldn't do that. It just said, oh, you have an SD card. You want us to save your video there? But no, I don't, because I've got so much internal storage. I can save it there. It's a typical Samsung camera. Should we do an AR emoji?
We're ready for the taste test, aren't we?
I can't.
No, well, you do have two people in the studio audience.
We're going to have to ask Omar and Sarah to taste it, okay?
Are they okay giving their opinions on the air? Did you ask them?
Giving your opinions on
She's
the air?
She's a one-woman GDPR.
Do you mind if we share images of your face with the world? In any medium thereafter?
They already signed that. It's too late.
Oh, there. Yeah.
In any universe?
Oh, okay.
We actually
imagine.
I'm trying to be polite.
No, that's
good.
If
I were there with my daughter, I would not want her shown on your
These people are adults, and they've already signed away their life.
And they've already signed a waiver.
So
remind me not to bring my daughter to the studio.
Yeah, well, you have to sign for her because she's not of age.
Well, I wouldn't. So she'd have to like stand at the door looking in.
Oh, we're getting this new thing, a new sponsor called Envoy, where they have a, you know, you've done that. Like, okay, give that to Sarah. Wait, it might be a little hot. Oh, there's two of them. Okay, Omar and Sarah, you get to taste the roti and give us your professional roti taster opinion.
I have a gluten allergy.
She has a gluten allergy. She can't eat it. Omar, they're all for you. Can you eat them? Yeah, he says I'll eat them. It's hot. Careful.
Okay.
Do you want to give him some butter or something? No, you eat it dry.
Some chutney.
Oh, we want some chutney now. No.
Nutella,
just take
man.
A taste. Nutella is the way to do it. Yeah, just a taste, Omar, just to see. Is this as good as mother's? Mom's roti.
Better.
Oh. Better. Better. You like it? Yeah. It was made by a machine.
They do have gluten-free flour options.
Your mom is now replaced.
Yeah, you could probably make it with almond flour or one of the other
But it is. It's a $1,000 replacement, which is expensive.
But cheaper than
Moms don't come cheap.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay, they got their...
Meanwhile, we have a very big story today, you know.
What's the big story today?
Facebook pivots to privacy.
Oh,
okay. Let's talk about it.
We should do that. And I want to, the corollary to this is Facebook wants to become a bank.
Oh,
so let's find that story.
Both Facebook and Apple actually are starting to look like that. Apple did a deal with Goldman Sachs to do a credit card, which I think is a first step towards doing its own bank. Here is Alex Stamos' Insta reaction to this is the privacy-focused vision for social networking. I'd log in, but I don't have a Facebook account. So I haven't read this yet, but maybe, Jeff, you can summarize.
I think it's a very big deal. He's saying that over time, and it's going to take time, he's going to switch the company pretty much to encrypted messaging.
The whole thing.
And yeah. I mean, I don't know how much of the old Facebook will remain, or how, and this will take time, but he believes that you know, he's listened and seen the pressure and seen the error of their ways, though he doesn't go into great confession, and says that the way people are going to want to communicate going forward is in control, and they're going to want encryption, and they're going to want a lack of permanence, and they're going to want interoperability across the services, and they're going to want to be able to communicate with people without necessarily knowing the phone number.
I will confess, you know, when I heard this, I laughed, and I think others have. But the proof is in the pudding. I mean, if he really does this, Facebook would be I would go back. Right. So here he says the privacy, this privacy focused platform. So this is really a redesign. Right. This is
it's a real pivot. I mean, this is a honest to God pivot.
We plan to build this the way we've developed WhatsApp. Focus on the most fundamental and private use case messaging. Talk about a pivot. Say Facebook is now a messaging platform. Make it as secure as possible, then build more ways for people to interact on top of that, including calls, video chats, groups, stories, business payments, commerce, and ultimately a platform for other private services. You know what? The model for this is probably Line and WeChat.
Mm, yeah.
Line is used in Japan, WeChat in China, and they've become dominant platforms. I mean, very successful.
But they're not encrypted. This will be.
That's probably smart, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's going to be cops will hate it, and there will be, you know, dark things that happen on these platforms as they do now on WhatsApp, but they'll happen at a smaller scale.
So here are the principles of this platform. As you mentioned, private interactions. People could have simple, intimate places where they have clear control over who can communicate with them and confidence that no one else can access what they share. This begs the question, how are they going to do advertising?
There's no mention of the business model to this at all. My guess is that he makes reference to being able to have connections with a merchant, with a company. So I wonder whether enabling connections becomes a new form of advertising, which would be really revolutionary in and of itself. But that is me guessing. By the way, full disclosure, I raised money for my school from Facebook. I'm independent of Facebook. I received no money personally from Facebook. End of disclosure. Keep going.
So that is kind of interesting, because it would be, from an advertiser's point of view, if all the interactions on Facebook were opt-in on the user's part of. So the advertiser comes to Facebook, you know, let's say it's Pampers, diapers, and says, look, we want to have a relationship with parents who have infants on Facebook. And Facebook says, okay, well, we're going to ask them if they want to have a relationship with you. And the parents who opt in, and of course, Pampers would probably say, well, you get coupons, you know, there's going to be some sort of incentive.
Right.
The parents who opt in are actually the people Pampers most wants to talk to, right? People who are buying diapers and who want what Pampers has to offer. So if that
is... Let me be clear here again. We are just speculating.
We don't know how they're going to do this.
We have no idea, but this is how I think it could work.
In a way, that's like our model. That's what our model is.
So wait, you guys, before we get all speculative, I really think that by not including the business model in this, that he missed a real opportunity. And it's one thing to promise these things and to say these things, but to not have this is Silicon Valley's kind of what is it? Their weak link is they equate users with success.
Yeah. Build an audience first and then monetize later. And that's how Facebook started, frankly. I mean, Facebook didn't monetize
it. But Stacey, I don't think the problem is here. I see your point. But here's the problem. I don't think any present-day merchant, save perhaps Amazon, would understand this. And so he has to announce it first, figure it out first, probably doesn't know what the business model is. And the advertisers, the merchants call them, will follow along much later.
I would guess he has some thoughts.
Procter & Gamble, they'll say, what?
He probably has some thoughts, and I don't blame him for not saying anything yet because it's not clear. Yeah. And he can, honestly, they can afford to build this and not make any money on it for a few years. They've got, how much money do they have? So,
yeah, they're a publicly traded company, though. So they
well, that's true. They have a fiduciary responsibility.
He says in there that some countries will not want this service, and they're fine with not being in those countries.
Love it. That's the right answer, right?
So keep going
Australia,
down.
If Australia says you can't encrypt, you can't have it.
Maybe.
So number two, right after private interactions, is encryption. End-to-end encryption prevents anyone, including us, from seeing what you share. That's how it should be. That's Signal. That, by the way, is not, I guess Facebook Messenger does use Signal, right? So they use the Open Whisper platform. So I guess that's the case with Facebook Messenger, not with WhatsApp, I don't believe.
They're talking in their encryption section about working with law enforcement and how to prevent people from doing, quote, terrible things like child exploitation, terrorism, and extortion on these encrypted channels. So they're talking about how are they going to identify people who are abusing that. And they're training algorithms.
He does say, we had a case where one of our employees was jailed for not providing access to someone's private information, even though we couldn't access it because it was encrypted. Wow. Did we know that? I don't remember that. So he says, on balance, I believe working towards implementing end-to-end encryption for all private communications is the right thing to do. Messages and calls are some of the most sensitive private conversations people have. But we have to take the time to build the appropriate safety systems that stop bad actors as much as we can within the limits of an encrypted service. That begs the question, how much could they? If they can't see into it, they can't stop it at all.
Right. So that's what I was saying is they're going to use algorithms to detect those patterns.
What
Plus,
pattern?
He then later talks about
of connections
patterns of
bad
behavior
guy to bad
among
guy.
People
Metadata.
And right. connections between people. Okay. And he says, on balance, he believes that working towards implementing end-to-end encryption is the right thing to do.
But
so
they said we're going to
implement.
Yeah, we're going to discuss with
experts
before fully implementing end-to-end.
Mm-hmm. There are hedges in here.
So that's the big hedge on that is encryption. Reducing permanence, you mentioned that. Of course, that's what Snapchat does. People should be comfortable being themselves, should not have to worry about what they share coming back to hurt them later. That's, I think, one of the big things that keeps under 25s off Facebook. That mm-hmm. and the fact that their parents and grandparents are there, but they also want impermanence. They don't want to create a record of their behavior.
And he makes a point that you can opt out of the opt-out. You know, you can choose to save things. The stories now go away, and you can archive them. You could archive things. You could turn off the Mission Impossible tape, and it won't self-destruct.
You know what? If this is sincere, and I believe it, I feel like it is, and they do implement this, only Facebook could do this. And this could be huge. What is the monetization aside, and there are clearly issues there. There's also issues with encryption, but let's put those aside for a second. Would this make Facebook less interesting for its current users or more interesting?
I think it probably broadens the user base, and the people who are uncomfortable today would be more comfortable coming back to the platform or spending time on the platform.
I hope he's sincere in this. I mean,
it doesn't address the big issue of people spending time on Facebook and feeling bad about themselves. Right. So there's the issues of like sharing fake news, sharing bad stories, not understanding.
Yeah, but you don't hear, do you hear that about messaging apps?
You hear that about WhatsApp. It has been a major factor in disinformation campaigns in Brazil and India.
In India, it's been used to create mob violence.
So there are huge issues still there.
Yeah. But that's because it's a one-to-many platform. And it doesn't sound like he's...
a one-to-few. It's a one-to-not-many.
But this sounds like more one-to-one, right?
Although
they will have groups.
Yeah, you absolutely have to. But they reduced how many hops you can make with it.
Yeah.
Recently, to try to get to that. So yeah, I think it has the opportunity to pull down, and it as some are arguing, it adds friction into the sharing. How news works with this, I have no effing idea.
Well, but
they're making it apart from this.
Go ahead, Stacey.
Yeah, they're going to make it much more. He calls it interoperability, but it's basically, you know, Messenger, Instagram, WhatsApp, all of those things. You're going to be able to message cross-platform to people. I don't know how I feel about that.
It's going to be at your option. But
isn't that what you want?
Stacey,
you want a phone that can call anybody, right? Isn't that what you want?
Well, but I'm calling anybody who's on a Facebook platform.
Right.
And I don't want my data shared across different platforms. My audience on Facebook versus my audience on Instagram might be different.
I don't think it's an audience anymore.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I don't think it's an audience anymore.
My contacts.
It's a circle, right? And second, part of the point of this is that is someone who you don't want, let's say it's a merchant, you don't want them to know your phone number. You can have them contact you using the same technology through Facebook, not through SMS. So
well,
you have more privacy
have
in that
my...
sense.
But so what Mark's
well,
probably
what is
thinking
your Facebook
is
anymore, Stacey? What is it anymore? It becomes something entirely new.
Right. I just don't trust them.
Yeah, that's what this all comes down to, is how sincere is this? I think the opportunity
he could be very sincere.
I think it's sincere. I think the opportunity.
I think he knows he's got a crisis to deal with, and he's trying to creatively deal with it.
Boy, you know,
we'll see.
I've been extremely critical of Facebook and left Facebook, but if what he's describing here, for instance, if this is created, Facebook would have tools, and this is going to be the crux of the matter. If they have the willingness to use them to keep you from getting spam. To keep you, you know, to give you control. This is something the phone companies have been unwilling to do, right, with robocalls and spam texts. But if Facebook is sincere about this, and in order to make this a good platform, they'd have to. And I know Mark is thinking, as a technologist, we could figure that part out. The real challenge,
here's the key.
The real challenge is for them not to get sucked in. This is what happens, but this is what happened with Google. It's what happened with Facebook, is you start with great intentions, and then you get sucked into the monetization strategy, and you start to give more and more and more to the people who are giving you money, your product becomes the users, your customers become the advertisers. This is a shift to say our customers are our users, and if they do that properly, that's exactly what they should do.
This potentially is the end of the mass. We're speculating. We don't know. But you can't imagine how you can amass a million people at once for a message. And so if that's what they do, then those who want to send messages to us have to establish a different kind of relationship and a different value. That would be way higher value, because if you make that connection with somebody, that's way high value. But if this is the first move, and again, we don't know. We are speculating. We are hoping here. But if it moves away from volume for volume's sake, attention for attention's sake, clicks for clicks' sake, and all of that, that is the ill of not only the internet but also mass media. It's the reason we have CNN the way it is.
Yep.
Then that could be a really revolutionary thing. But we don't know. And proof in the pudding.
Yeah, because
you're right. It depends on how he executes it, and it depends on whether any merchants are going to find value in this.
He hasn't exactly earned our trust.
Well, and he's still not earning it because he doesn't talk about monetization here. And I agree, or I think it's a really interesting point that you brought up about the end of the mass. And we may even not see it when we talk about firms like WeChat. Their monetization strategies are very different. They're actually doing much more of an app store centric model. So we could be looking at something like that. And you saw that, I think it was last week, they talked about Facebook doing a digital coin, right, for WhatsApp. So if you look at that, then maybe this is, yes, they had to do something. This is a crisis. But the cynical side of me is like, well, maybe it's just time. Maybe we're maturing past crappy advertising. You know, like we went past crappy banner ads, and now we're going to go past crappy invasive ads. and we're going to move to a different model. And this may be that.
This is saying, honestly, I mean, again, I can't vouch for his sincerity, but what he's, in my opinion, saying is we want to be a platform. Line is a platform. WeChat is a platform. Right. And just as Microsoft Windows was a platform, one of the key elements to platform is your platform, the people who build on your platform make more money than you do, but you make money in aggregate because they all give you the pennies as they make the dollars. And it's not, and now, and look what Microsoft did. They pivoted from Windows to the cloud as their platform, to Azure. And I think we all understand platform is extremely powerful. This makes a lot of sense if Facebook, given the problems Facebook has, which are at this point almost insurmountable, and people are probably leaving in droves, and more importantly, nobody under 25 is using them. Here's an opportunity to say, well, we don't need that. We'll be a platform. We'll be like Line and WeChat. If you want to book airplane tickets, you'll do it on Facebook.
If you want to pay for your cab, if you want to get pizza, if you want to do anything, it becomes a secure transactional platform.
And given this, the size of their existing user base, and even more importantly, that user base is in countries, developing nations where there isn't a platform yet, I think the opportunity is huge. And frankly,
we can't wait to see what the stock market thinks.
We've lost out because we don't have a Line or a WeChat in the United States. And Facebook is
kind of... We also don't have government control that makes it possible. So your point, Leo, earlier is right. Facebook's scale that it built the old-fashioned way is what enables them to potentially build a WeChat.
And by the way, and this is the bigger warning than the monetization warning, they become a quasi-governmental operation, because as soon as you're paying your water bill through them and you're buying airplane tickets through them and you're transferring money, they become more than a bank. They become a quasi-governmental organization. They become the center of your universe. And I think Mark also recognizes that, and that's a huge opportunity. Isn't really that what Amazon is trying to do?
That's what Amazon's trying to do. That's what WeChat did. And yes.
So I can see why Mark would say, well, don't worry about monetization. If we build this platform, if we build it, they will come. Here's Alex Stamos' reaction. He's the former chief information security officer who left Facebook disgruntled. He's a very smart guy, highly respected. He said, this is not a post I expected to read, and I wish he'd written it 2 years ago.
That's interesting, isn't it?
2 years ago is when Alex left. Hopefully, the external vision is reflected in internal moves to change product culture. That's key, right? That informs thousands of product and engineering decisions per year. Turning a ship that large is difficult. And I would agree with that. And maybe Mark Zuckerberg is the only founder who still has enough control and enough influence over a massive organization that he could actually do it. And certainly he thinks he can. Yeah, much more than Eric and Larry. He talks about the two factors.
Sergey and Larry.
What did I say?
Eric South. Yeah.
Eric and Larry. Yes. Sergey and Larry. He says, I totally agree. Encryption is decentralizing. It reduces the chance for centralized access to masses of data. But making end-to-end encryption an expected requirement for social networks is a massive competitive moat. Of course it is. Why do you think Mark wants to do it? Of course. He talks about interoperability, and God bless him. I hope he does it. But the ultimate goal of this is just as Amazon's ultimate goal is to get every transaction going through Amazon's, Mark's goal would be to have every transaction go through Facebook. And I think he's uniquely positioned to do that, frankly. Wow, Stamos says. It's refreshing to see Mark explicitly talk about the downsides of connecting people. A problem, right? Facebook's never really acknowledged that. And even using the magic words like terrorism and child exploitation and extortion. That's all.
Yeah, he's using those as a reason to not allow end-to-end encryption.
Right.
To hold off on that.
But he's right.
Those are hard issues.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are really difficult and individualized, and they don't scale.
It would be a mistake to insist on purity at this point anyway. He might in the long run. I don't know. It's really going to also depend on what his customers want. Ultimately,
they want purity.
And the problem here is the laws are going to come in like crazy.
Right. Well, I love it that he says, if you don't like it, we'll go somewhere else. Yeah. Again, you couldn't do a startup this way But given it's a huge pivot, you're right, Jeff. But given the size of Facebook's audience, and I would bet at least a number, a good percentage of it would love something like this.
So can we talk about this in light of the fact that they have been using our phone number for advertising?
Stamos raises that. He says, to that end, this week's two-factor number authentication screw-up has become more important for Facebook to address. While the number of affected is small, this is a clear privacy security win, and not fixing it is incompatible with his sentiment that he wants to bend the curve on perception. So the issue we should tell people is, well, and there you go, Jeremy Burge of Emojipedia tweeted it. For years, Facebook claimed adding a phone number to Facebook was for two-factor, for security, but it can be searched, and there's no way to disable that. You can limit it to friends, but it can still be searched, which means it isn't just two-factor. No, in fact, remember, we reported on this months ago that you could also buy ads by somebody's two-factor phone number. So Facebook has been using it to monetize as well.
And that's
this is why they have a lot. They got a big hole to do. You know, they've dug themselves a
massive.
I mean,
you can't.
And I would have fixed that and responded to that before Mark's post today, because it just, I mean, Stacey put two and two together there immediately. Yes.
Well, and I don't know if they're just assuming that people, not enough of their users actually care about two-factor, which is probably a reasonable thing to think. Mm-hmm. But I think two-factor is becoming more and more relevant to more and more people today. And thus, they can't. This is why I don't trust Facebook. When everybody, when the whole sky is coming down on them, they will address it. But when it's just a few people who are admittedly very smart, they're just like, eh, screw it. They're kind of like the Republican Party in some ways.
Stamos calls this
big.
Whoa.
them's shots fired, right? I'm gonna move on now, Stacey. We'll pretend we didn't hear that. Stamos calls this a judo move. Actually, it's very interesting. He said, right now, Facebook gets crap from the same people for both invading people's privacy and not policing communications enough. This, what Mark's just announced, is a judo move. In a world where everything is encrypted and doesn't last long, entire classes of scandal are invisible to the media.
That is true.
Yep. Yep.
And it's much better to be like, everything's encrypted and private.
So we don't know what you're doing.
We don't share our data with researchers. Yeah. we can't share our data with researchers.
Let me express my concern about this as Mr. Public. I would lament if we lose the ability to do a couple things. One is to say something to the world. Two is to find people like me who I don't know and organize. Three is to share news and information. These are things that Facebook is still used for and used effectively. So is Twitter.
Well, that's what Twitter's for.
Twitter has its weaknesses. Well, but I think Facebook has some real differences there, and I would hate to see Twitter become then, and then everybody's going to go up to Twitter and talk about, you're a monopoly on news now, and they're going to give them crap.
Here's the problem with Twitter that Facebook immediately fixes, which is I can't control who's sending me messages and is in my feed. You know, anybody can spam me on Twitter.
Well,
this is the very
first. You know who did that? Google Plus.
Yeah.
Google could have had this. They could have had this.
Yeah, Google, this was very close to what Google Plus should have been. I honestly think Mark said, oh, we're screwed. We're gonna if we continue down the path we're going, I'm gonna spend the rest of my life in litigation, in fighting laws, in going to Congress,
and
testifying
before,
in parliament. This is not a life I want to live. What can we do? This is actually, in my opinion, exactly the right thing to do. I imagine a Facebook where all the communications, it's really a messaging platform where all the communications that I have are with people I choose to communicate with, and I don't hear from anybody I don't want to communicate with. It's all encrypted. This, by the way, lets them off the hook. In fact, Stamos says Zuck has clearly given up on entering China because these changes make that impossible. Yeah. Good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He also says, that a secure data storage section is a massive shot across Apple's bow. Because he says, we will not build data centers in countries that have a track record of violating human rights. Well, we're not going to be in China. That's brilliant.
You know, I envision, Leo, that there was a whiteboard in his fishbowl. And they wrote down every problem they have and stand back and say, what could solve this? And it meant changing the essence of what Facebook is, right? They had to give up that notion of sharing and connecting, or connected at a very much smaller scale. They had to give up their business model. And Stacey, I still think the answer to you in part is they don't know. But they have – that's very Silicon Valley, is saying, well, let's build it and see if we're right, and then we'll figure that out. But it's a judo move, yeah. Alex is way right. It's fascinating.
He also brings up WeChat. He says, this is the WeChat play, moving away from ads to intermediating commerce. How you replace all that ad money is a big question for shareholders. Yeah, but I think there's an opportunity here. WeChat's doing okay. This is their article in the New York Times is about their cryptocurrencies. I don't know if they do cryptocurrencies. I don't know if they need to. Maybe they do a token system. Maybe. There's money there too, right? So he says the winners in this announcement are encryption advocates, users in oppressive countries, users who don't like LE getting their chats, that's law enforcement, EU data protection authorities, and WeChat, because WeChat has China all to itself. It's a greenfield now. Losers.
Right.
Groups who want more content moderation. Yeah, Facebook has dodged a bullet because they don't have to moderate. They don't need to.
And I'll tell you more about that in a minute. That's where I spent last week, was dealing with just that, with regulators and legislators and other people.
Other losers, EU law enforcement, U.S. law enforcement, and the intelligence community. Smaller competitors who can't afford end-to-end encryption. And WeChat also loses because it's limited to China. You'll be boxed out.
Brilliant analysis.
I think it's a brilliant move. And you know what? This kind of reaffirms in my mind Zuckerberg's position as a deep thinker. I hadn't been getting that impression in the last few years. I've just got an impression of him as a sweaty apologizer.
I'm about to tweet that Leo Laporte, of late Facebook hater,
yes,
is loving this announcement.
Well, if he has to live up
to it. You won't see it because you're not on Twitter.
Actually, somehow I am on Twitter. I have some... You know, this is what's really hard about this, throwing these things out, is as soon as you go back, apparently I had a cookie stored on this browser. Now I'm on my old Twitter account, which I thought I had deleted. So I'll delete it again. Facebook I did deactivate as well.
Just go with it, Leo. Go with it.
No.
Go with it.
I use Twitter. Okay. I use a non-personal account, which I don't use to personally tweet, as a news feed. And it's a great news feed. Especially, in fact, I wrote a blog post about it at leolaporte.com. If you use TweetDeck, TweetDeck's awesome because I talked about this before. I could turn off retweets, which is where all the outrage and heat comes from. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I just see original tweets, and I only see it from journalists because that's who I follow. That's Stacey's utopia. But the thing is, for me,
that's
it's
not
never
true. I don't actually use it as a news feed so much as I use it as
a good news feed.
Well, it is, but it's a way to continually be exposed to ideas from some of the wonky people.
Yeah, you have conversations.
I have conversations.
I still have trouble with conversations on Twitter, but.
Twitter's good for that.
I can lurk. Oh, I hate people as much as you do. Maybe more.
Ooh.
I'm just fighting words.
I'm the grumpiest of us all, and I'm the one who likes people.
That's true.
Maybe we need to be grumpier, Stacey.
People who need people are the...
Honestly, most of the time, Twitter is still a lot of junk. But I do, as having it as a news feed gives me stories, and that's useful. The one thing I never do is look at replies, and that's why I don't get in conversations, because I can't control the at replies. And I don't want to see most of the stuff people are tweeting at me. I'm surprised that you don't get that, but I'm glad you don't. I think that your mind will be changed.
I get some of it, but
you get a lot of it.
To ignore it. Yeah, but I'm, you know, sensitive. Leo, you've been public for years. You get people who, you know, stupid critics like I used to be on TV Guide complaining about people like you who used to be on TV.
When I was before Twitter, I was a happy man. I didn't know what people really thought. Now I know what people think.
I think maybe people just are nice to me. I've had like maybe just a few.
I've looked at your conversations on Twitter, and it's my mind boggles. It's like,
why?
What a nice conversation. No. What a wonderful.
I was like, I love my people.
She gets nice comments. People are saying interesting things. I understand why you like Twitter. It just hasn't soured for you yet.
Oh.
and God willing, it never will.
Maybe I'm just so nice that people.
I thought I was nice, but maybe I'm not. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe I just think I'm nice.
Ooh.
So can I tell you about where I was last week?
Yes.
I now want to know what Stacy's going ooh about. And then I would like to know.
Someone tweeted me something really interesting, and I'm like, guys.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
Levelhotpantry.com. Level, the AI magic behind the hot pantry. I don't even know what this is. This is so
What's
exciting.
A hot pantry?
This is exactly why I'm not on Twitter.
Oh, gosh. This
you
is
just
awesome.
Got sucked into something that by the end of the hour and a half you spend on it, you will say, oh, what a waste of time.
Oh, Leo's going to get a hot pantry.
The level hot pantry. Yeah. No, my people are going to eat cold noodles and ramen.
And roti.
No, they're not even getting roti. We're sending it back. They're not getting nothing.
Stacey.
Oh, it's like a microwave that you. This is terrible.
But it's hot.
This is interesting. It's an oven. I think it's
Karsten,
using steam, too.
Start a petition among the staff to get one, whatever it is.
No, this is exactly what's wrong with Twitter.
Oh, and they restock it.
You don't know, Stacey, because you're young. But when you get to be my age, you will regret all the crap you're feeding your mind right now.
Oh, no.
She wants to
my
feed
mind
her
is
stomach.
Full of all kinds of lovely. Yeah,
like the
plus
level
I have to
hot
feed my
pantry.
Child. This is like literally my job.
That's
Where do I
just
order.
Where's the Karsten order wants to buy it.
Where's the order?
Revolutionizing the office pantry. No, I'll tell you what's wrong with this. You don't even know, and you can't tell from this page, but I'll tell you exactly what's wrong with this.
No.
The smell. Unless this is vented.
My microwave does not smell.
Vented to the outside. You obviously never worked in an office. People cook all sorts of crap in that microwave.
True.
And the smell, all it takes is one person to cook the leftover fish from last night, and this place will smell like fish for days.
As a wag said in my office once when someone did that, why don't you just skip a step and scrap and crap in the microwave?
Yes. Yes. I don't want
the
smell.
These guys provide the snacks. Maybe they don't provide fish-based snacks.
Yeah. Maybe they have a smell
standard.
I mean,
they're in control. Yeah.
No, you're going to smell this. You're going to smell sausage cooking. You're going to smell all sorts of crap.
Sausage.
You know,
sorry. We got to stop talking about food.
I know just from our microwave.
See, the problem is.
And my office is right next to the microwave. That this
he's given up good food, so now he just doesn't want anybody to enjoy food.
I don't want anybody to enjoy their food.
He's being the ultimate grump.
All right. I'm going to a lovely cocktail party at Bourbon and Branch in a little bit. LastPass is having its party at the RSA conference. And, in fact, if you're at RSA, go to the LastPass booth, get the password. We'll see you at Bourbon and Branch in a couple of hours. And I'm not going to be able to eat anything there.
No.
How was the roti, Omar? Did you eat the whole thing? No, there's leftover roti. He ate one. That's like three
that's
stars.
That's moderate.
If it was really good, they'd be gone, right? Yeah, all right. I know. I'm no fool. Our show today brought to you by...
you are cranky pants today. Okay.
He really is.
I'm not cranky. I'm honest.
Have some bread. You'll feel a lot better.
I am not a Pollyanna.
I am
not a Pollyanna either. You were so much more credulous on Facebook. Okay, do your ad. I'm sorry. Cranky pants.
You're right. I was the Pollyanna on Facebook, wasn't I?
I know.
No, I'm hopeful because I feel like you're right. All evidence points to the contrary that Mark will screw this up, that he's not sincere, blah, blah, blah. But I do believe he's sincere. I believe he has the wherewithal to do this. If he really does this, this will save Facebook. For me, and I think for itself, and provide a much needed service. My concern is at the other end, where it becomes a monopoly, basically. There's some issues with that, or a monopsony. There's some issues with that, because we're going to live in a world, frankly, where it's Amazon, Google, Facebook, and that's it.
And Twit.
And me, because...
King of the podcast.
If I could make a pivot, I would. There's no pivot left. I am pivot free. We're stuck. We're on this road, and we're going...
Leo, you and I are too old to pivot.
Yes, we are. Stacy,
we're past.
You still can pivot. It's not too late for Stacy to pivot. But former TV critic, TV Guide critic Jeff Jarvis, and former podcaster Leo Laporte. No pivoting. There's nowhere left to pivot.
No pivots left. We are past the last pivot.
We're not a pivot. We're a
divot. Of no return.
Yep.
We're a pivot of no return.
Pivot of no return.
You can't pivot out of your divot. I like it.
Although I am thinking of opening a roadie restaurant.
Be very slow. Once a minute.
Yeah, once a minute. Hold on.
You could have multiple machines.
Hold on. Okay, now you can have it. Our show today brought to you by On Deck. If you are a small business owner, let's say you have a nice little roadie shop, a nice little business going, but you've run up against a little bit of an impediment. You only have one roadie machine. That means you can only serve one customer a minute. You'd like to do two a minute or three a minute. What do you need? You need some capital. You need some cash. You need On Deck. On Deck is for the small business with fast, easy, tailored financing. This is what they do. And they have done it a lot. They've lent over $10 billion to over 80,000 small businesses. And they've done it well with an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and a 9.8 out of 10 rating on Trustpilot. This is the company to go to. The application process is simple. You can apply online or you could talk to one of their U.S.-based loan specialists on the phone and get approved almost instantly in minutes. And it doesn't impact your personal credit because it's based on your business, right? It's the secure financing service the business owners everywhere can truly rely on. Get all the roadie machines you need. If you're a small business owner and you need access to capital, don't go to your credit card. That's crazy talk. Go to ondeck.com/twig right now. And because you're listening to the show, we're going to set up a call, if you want, with one of their U.S.-based loan specialists. No pressure, no hard sell. Like that's nice guy Max M. that you're seeing from Denver. He's a nice guy. You'd like to talk to him. He can tell you what the rates are. He can tell you. He can give you the whole process. And no cost. All you have to do is go to OnDeck, O-N-D-E-C-K, ondeck.com/twig. Get that consultation. Find out more at ondeck.com/twig. This is a great place to get the cash you need to build your business. ondeck.com/twig. We thank them so much for their support of small businesses like ours everywhere. Well, I am glad you brought that up, Jeff, because I had not really paid any attention to it because it came out this morning.
You're welcome.
And I was busy. I didn't see it. I'm really glad
we had. I'm glad it happened today because I wasn't sure what to think fully, and I'm still not sure. But your reaction fascinates me, so it's good.
May be misunderstanding it, but my sense of what he's trying to do is I can't. Well, you know what? Let's wait till Ben Thompson weighs in with Stratechery. But I think he'll agree with me that this is a smart move. He's, you know, yeah, you got shareholders.
What are we, chopped liver?
No.
Yeah, apparently we're not Stratechery
level. What do you need?
No. I mean,
I'm more positive than you guys. Jeff, he charges for his newsletter.
Yeah. That's over.
Stacy does not.
Forget it.
Stacy does not. Well, it does kind of bypass that whole are you helping publishers or not thing. That's over.
Well, but here's the thing. If you look at Brazil and India and say that WhatsApp has been an incredibly important vehicle for news, true and false, then news organizations need to figure out how to promulgate news on messaging. And they haven't done crapola about that on the whole. There have been a few small experiments, but they're going to complain miserably. But their old – this kills for once and for all the old drawn audience – to your destination model. Mass media
What about something like what LinkedIn does, like the articles on LinkedIn? And I say that because I actually do way better posting something on LinkedIn to my very targeted number.
Right.
I mean, I do have quote unquote followers there, but I'm also hashtagging things. I don't know.
It's also your topicality is appropriate for LinkedIn.
That's to me, this is the most important thing.
True.
And it's what we learned here in the podcast space is when it is an affinity group, when you're talking to an affinity group, people who opt into the conversation with you, those conversations are not only better, they're more valuable. And I think that's exactly what he's saying is, no, I think the whole idea of casting the wide net and the news feed, that's all gone. This is going to be a conversation network. And, you know, we've been saying this for a while. This is what we need.
Always should have been.
Always should have been.
Well, I think this is a function also not just of the regulatory thing, but it's also a function of maturity. When you're in college, the idea of having all of your conversations on a public square is way more exciting than when you're 40 and you realize you have
That's
all
right.
kinds of different layers and the
That's
person
right.
you were in college is not the person you
That's
are
exactly
now and
right.
all this other
yeah.
stuff.
He will soon realize that reminding everybody of birthdays is cruel.
He's getting there.
I love when people remember my birthday, and I still will when I'm 80.
It.
Oh, Jeff.
No, you won't.
Now
no,
you're
you
the
won't.
Grumpy
I won't
pants.
Be here. I won't be here to collect on that bet, but you won't.
I do.
Even you, Miss Sunshine, will not.
I do think
I
this is also
say,
very
as a woman,
brave. Go ahead.
I should be freaked out.
No. Why?
Like, about my birthday, but
no.
I'm not. Because
no.
I'm a woman.
Yeah.
I'm less valuable as I age.
Good for you. You think we're more valuable now?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. Well, no, you've passed the point of value.
Oh, good. I peeped him. We're on our
Thanks
downhill.
A lot.
We're on the downhill, Jeff.
Oh, yeah, we are. Yeah, we are.
Now you're just a former TV critic and a former radio
Stacey.
Host.
I didn't put the
thing up on your lower third.
I'm a former small-time host of a little-watched cable channel. So, and I want, if I ever get on MSNBC again, which I won't, I want that for my lower third. Former virtual reality barista. All right, what else is there to talk about?
Things. All right, so can I tell you for just a second where I was last week?
Yeah, and where you are today.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm in Boston, but that's another matter.
Well, so tell us why you're in Boston, too. Go ahead.
No, I can't. Last week, I was, something's going on. I can't. Something's happened, but I can't. No. But last week, I was at Ditchley, which is an old estate in the UK near Oxford, in Oxfordshire. And there was a transatlantic working group on content moderation and freedom of expression that I've joined, organized by former FCC Commissioner Susan Ness. And she brought in an amazing crew of people there to talk about regulation, right? So I thought I'm going to be the only person in the room who's going to be defending the internet. It was a fascinating discussion, but I don't want to go into detail. I'm going to write up some ideas from this shortly. But you see all the more why Zuckerberg's move is so needed, because the regulation on Facebook especially is coming from every possible quarter. And last week before I went, I wrote a post about 11 and 13 and then a journalism report. And then most of all, there's the Commons Committee that Zuckerberg wouldn't testify before, released its report. And it is, to my mind, frightening. And just to give you two little episodes from it. One is that they want to go after not just the technology company, but also the technologists in the company with heavy fines if they don't do what they want them to do. So this is a shot across the bow of a programmer inside Facebook. The second thing that they say is that they want to increase PII, personally identifiable information, not just to what GDPR declares, which is a whole bunch of ridiculous things like your IP address. They also want it to be inferred data. Which to me is a death blow. No, it's a death blow against machine learning and against knowledge. No.
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 This is good. Let's debate this, because I've been calling for a redefinition of PII to include more things, including like what you can be inferred from your metadata as essential for privacy, for like as we connect more devices. No, it doesn't.
It does not. Because you can't predict the inference.
Okay. You cannot include that with other, like PII is a bundle of information. It's not one piece of information. So if you pull in one piece of information, that's relevant from a bunch of people. So it changes the way you have to assemble your data, but you can still do machine learning. Trust me. Keep going. Sorry, there were more things, but I got very excited.
I love you anyway. So I just wanted to, I'll write more about all this stuff in the future, but it was interesting that in a truly multi-stakeholder meeting convened under Chatham House, which is why I'm not saying who was there and not quoting things directly, it gave me – so I'm going to write about regulatory regimes that I can get behind that do make sense to me, and that's a big move for me just because everything I've seen thus far has been stupid. But if we can start to get a conversation going about what would be smart – I'm eager to have that conversation. So more to come later, but the atmospheric remains rabidly anti-Facebook, and so the timing of this is fascinating to me. That was all I wanted to say.
Stacy?
No, I just I'm excited by that, but I am really excited about this PII thing. So Jeff, send me your post when you're ready. I want to talk all about it.
The post about the Commons report is up on Medium now, the one I did before going, Europe Against the Net. And so my summary of the Damian Collins report is the last third of that. The first third is 11 and 13, which I all the more hate more than ever. It's terrible. The middle is very wonky journalistic stuff about a report in the UK, but the bottom is about the Commons report. And you'll see my bullet points.
Yes. I skip over here. All of the
skip the journal wonky stuff. You won't care. But the bottom stuff is about the Collins report. No, yeah, you do. But most people don't. It's just being boring.
I was like, I am a journalist. Right, how was that? That's what my business card even says.
Sure. No, I'm talking about the audience. The people are formerly known as the audience, as my friend Jay Rosen says.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of the things that Mark is looking down the road at and just says, I'm pivoting. I'm getting out of here.
Yeah.
I don't blame him.
The torpedo came to the U-boat, and he just managed to move.
Yeah. So there are a couple of questions, of course, whether the torpedo is going to keep on coming anyway, because, I mean, these things don't go away because you said, I'm pivoting. So he may still have some splaining to do.
It's going to be N degree harder for him to do this, given the lack of trust and given the history. Because everybody's going to do what Stacy did and say, "Well, yeah. I don't trust them. I don't know. Are they doing this right?" So they've got to change the culture too, so markedly, which Alex makes reference to there, to prove through transparency and through collaboration with experts outside the company what they're doing. If they don't do that, they'll blow it.
By the way, you asked about Facebook's stock price. It basically closed up today, although it's essentially level in post-bell
trading. This came out after stock close, I think.
Yeah, came after market close.
Ah, okay. Well, the aftermarket, after-hours trading is pretty flat.
Because I think the market doesn't know what the F
is. I think they're waiting to see what Jeff Jarvis says.
Yeah. No, Leo Laporte. No,
yes.
Neither of us, Stacey, unfortunately. Yeah, I wonder what they're waiting for. I think ultimately, if I were an investor, I'd say this is good news, but it's going to be a bumpy transition.
If I were an investor, I'd again wonder about the monetization strategy.
Yeah.
Cause I mean, as an investor in Wall Street, you're not usually long-term, you're shorter term, right? That's the biggest criticism.
Yeah, this is going to be a long term.
It's like a relaunch though.
Yeah.
It's like a brand new Facebook. You know, the next question is, Will Twitter stock go up?
That's actually what I wondered. I was
Why would Twitter stock go up? Because this becomes
the way to talk to the mass.
The public place. Yeah. No mass. Yeah. There is no mass, Stacey.
Oh, it is good
for
Twitter.
Okay, sorry.
No, you're right. It is good for Twitter. You're right.
Yeah.
It just makes Twitter more of a dumpster fire.
It would be good for Instagram if it weren't on for... No, never mind. Snap. This probably... Could this be the last nail in the coffin of Snap? Yeah.
It's been on life support for some time, huh? Do you want to talk about... We talked about it on Twit, but I thought it might be something you'd like to talk about. Google refuses to remove an application, a Saudi Arabian application. But the story is more complicated than you might realize. And after I read more...
Please explain how it is, because this really gave me agita.
Yeah, so I'll give you the story, which is Google has been asked to remove a Saudi app called Absher, which lets men direct where women can travel and offers them alerts when their women, and in Saudi Arabia, men are guardians of women, including their wives, when they use a passport to leave Saudi Arabia. Members of Congress, including Jackie Speier, Ilhan Omar, and Rashida Tlaib, and 11 others demanded that Apple and Google kill the app. Both promised to investigate. Apple hasn't said anything yet. Google says, no, it doesn't violate any rules. We're going to keep it. If you just say that, that sounds pretty bad. But I'm very glad that I read Hacker News, because there was a much more nuanced conversation. And it convinced me that Google did the right thing.
Wow. You are just Mr. Open-minded today. Grumpy, but open-minded.
So,
what was the nuance on Hacker News?
Well, read the comment thread. So,
no, you're going to do it for us.
I will do it for you. The app provides various governmental services, among them a digitized version. And this is important, a digitized version of the yellow sheet. That yellow sheet exists and has existed for years in Saudi Arabia. A legal guardian has to fill it out for a woman to be able to leave the country. But getting rid of the app doesn't get rid of the yellow sheet.
Right.
The process, that's a governmental process that is going to continue. And in fact, some activists in Saudi Arabia say the app actually makes it easier for women to move. Because part of the yellow sheet process, the guardian has to go to the government office. You can't just sign it. You can't write a note and say it's okay for her to leave the country. You have to go in. And that is a burden.
Wow.
And this app eliminates that. You don't have to get a signature on paper. You don't have to make a personal appearance. It's very straightforward. So some activists in Saudi Arabia see value in that kind of app because it makes it easier to get out of the country without supervision. And getting rid of the app wouldn't in any way change the system. Now, there were people on Hacker News who say, but this doesn't matter. It's an immoral action. And so Google shouldn't be making an app that allows this. And I understand that point of view, but I think in balance.
Yeah. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
So you come down to balance thinking that they improved it by a skunch.
Yeah, and I read a number of tweets from women in Saudi Arabia who said, of course it's bad. That it exists or need to exist is a bad thing, but this is Saudi law. And to many of women in Saudi Arabia, scrapping the app would hurt their agency, not help it. They need male approval to travel either way, and by making it easier to get the app in practice... gives women more agency by lowering the bureaucratic barriers to travel.
It's like taking down massage parlor things off various online sites, sent sex workers back to the arms of the pimps,
right,
who abused them,
right,
and took away their agency. Here's the thing: we've got a messed up world, and we've got to go back to the core problems we have. And it's not the technological angle to the story. Saudi's got real problems here that need to get fixed.
Yeah.
That aren't being.
And really, it's a mistake, I think, to blame Google or to focus on the app when what you should be doing is talking to the Saudi government.
Yeah, the
government.
Bigger question is how our government buddies up to a regime does that.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. In some ways you attack Google because you can. Like right now, I could change the world by tweeting. But it feels like you're
Neo can't.
So I can see. Well, yeah.
Anyway, yes. So I think this is interesting. And, honestly, nuance is a bad thing to introduce into a show of any kind, because really hot takes and anger are much more effective. But
no, this is good. We're trying to keep Jeff from shouting.
Anyway, I don't know. I'll let you think about it. And if you decide to come back later with a thought, it's more complicated than one might think. Yes, meanwhile, Google does apparently, at least according to The Intercept, continue to work on Dragonfly, its Chinese search engine.
But Google then responded.
Here it is.
Google responded.
The speculation is inaccurate. So The Intercept, which I think sometimes does get things wrong on this stuff.
It's your buddy Sam Biddle.
Oh, forget it. I'm sorry I even brought it up. Okay, Google says this speculation is inaccurate. Rather, we've said for many months we have no plans to launch search in China. There's no work being undertaken on such a project. Team members have moved to new projects. Biddle based it on commits to GitHub in the recent months. What Google said is we're going to let these people finish the thing they were working on and then move them on. But, you know, that's probably why there would continue to be commits. I'm going to give Google a pass.
Oh, there we go.
This is, once again, the Give Google a Pass show. You know what? This is another reason why it's great that Mark did what he did, and I hope he continues to pursue this. Because it puts the screws to companies like Google if Facebook says, okay, we're not going to be in China because we can't encrypt and we're not going to store data there. It makes it a lot harder for Google to say, well, but we want to be in China. It makes it a lot harder for Apple to do it. Apple's doing it. And they're supposed to
be. And Australia is small, so who cares?
Well, I think if one big one of these big Fangs, or as I love Amy Webb's term for them, the G Mafia, which is Google, Microsoft, Apple, no, I mean Amazon, IBM, Facebook, and Apple, the G Mafia. If one of them says, you know what, we're going to take a principled stand, we're not going to do it, it really makes it harder for the others to do it.
Yep.
I think. Do you want a Volvo Polestar 2? Sure you do.
Yeah.
It's not, it's got Google, it's got Android in it. It's a Google powered all electric.
It's the first one
built
with it in core, in native.
Yeah, native. And we're not talking Android Auto, I don't think. We're talking like Android.
Android.
Native Android for the car. It's also going to be 45 grand.
20,000 more than the, yes.
Well, it's... It's electric. It looks pretty nice, right?
Oh, wait.
It does look nice.
This says it's native Android Auto. The Verge is saying Polestar 2 is doing, hold up, native Android Auto.
Okay. Well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what they're saying.
Native Android I don't think it's Android Auto. A native Android infotainment system. So understand, Android Auto requires a phone with Android on it. This sounds like it's Android in the car.
Which is what they've been trying to sell.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Right?
It's still, yes, but it's still.
It's four cars.
Android
it's
auto.
Not the same Android I got done on my phone.
Sorry. I was like, that's the deceit, but I got you. I got what you're saying, and I got what I'm saying.
I got it, babe.
And so Waymo just announced today that they're going to be selling their sensors to other car makers. Interesting that Google becomes
the LiDAR,
a B2B supplier to auto manufacturers.
There was speculation that was what Apple was intending. That Apple decided, oh, we're not going to make cars. But we'll make stuff the car makers need. But Elon has always said, and I think Tesla has somewhat proven that to make it really work, you need the data. You need to do it all. You can't buy pieces from vendors. You have to make the whole thing because the data is
unless
critical.
What you're doing is. As a service.
I could see you buying the LiDAR. Yeah, right.
You could also do self-driving as a service.
Right. Yeah, okay.
You get access to our data.
You still have all the data. Right. The car would just not, be a, GM would make a car.
GDPR will cause crashes, but we won't go there today because I don't want to yell.
Is that what is going to happen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Jeff, I have to take us back. Can I take us slightly back?
Take
in the
us
show?
Back. Oh, no. Step back.
Are we done talking about cars?
Where are you clicking your ruby slippers to go to?
There's no place.
So
like.
I am going to. There's a story. Actually, I didn't see it on the rundown, and I'm sad. Google is making it easier for AI developers to keep users' data private, and it's actually talking about using differential privacy for machine learning on TensorFlow. So. That's exactly what we were just talking about, Jeff. that allows us to pull data in for machine learning without making it, so even things like PII, without making it a problem in identifying people. So I just thought that was like really worth bringing up, and I have many questions that are not answered in the story, but I kind of really want to know. And differential privacy is what Apple...
to define that. Sorry. I'm getting the...
No, differential privacy is what Apple's using.
Yes.
No, I
think... The idea...
Yes, which I think is right. Yes. Yes. All I'm saying, Stacey, is that I don't trust the government to define that because they do stupid things like saying every inference is now your property. That's dumb.
So, Stacey, what is differential privacy?
It's basically where they take your data and they insert random noise into... This is me making little sad things. Insert random noise and data into it so it can't be... It's not encrypted, so it's not... Saying it's decrypted is the wrong way to think about it.
The issue with data, of course, is that it's not hard at all to use the data to de-anonymize it, even if you've so-called anonymized it. So this is a way of anonymizing data that can't be, or theoretically can't be reversed. So it can't be traced back to the creator of the data, right?
Yes, yes. It can't be traced back to the person who's created it. And in the way they do it is by adding random noise to the user's patterns. And so when people, and so then they can, that noise becomes filtered out though, as they gather more and more data from a wide variety of people.
Right.
So basically it's like those mosaics. Think about it like that Bob Marley poster in your college dorm room that was made of other pictures of Bob Marley. If all of those are slightly blurred, you know, you can't see that it's Bob Marley in the individual pictures, but all together, you're like, oh, is that a Rasta reggae singer?
I got to ask, did you have that poster?
No, I did not.
Because that, I would have to rethink my...
I had a Monet waterline.
Oh, that's what I thought. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I did not have the Klimt, though. I just don't like it.
Oh, you don't have the Klimt. Oh, come on.
I didn't
the Kiss?
Have that, but no. I didn't have the Kiss, but I did have...
We have...
Water lilies?
A tapestry version of the Kiss hanging in our entryway. How about that?
There you go.
And next, I'm going to get a Bob Marley poster.
There you go.
I have the water lilies in my office, though. So Ulfar Erlingsson, who is a scientist at Google, research scientist, says differential privacy with mathematical certainty makes it impossible to trace the data back to its origin. You have an outcome that is in mathematical certainty. It's proven to work. You have an outcome that's independent of any one person's data, but it's still a good outcome. However, by masking outliers, it could sometimes remove relevant or interesting data, especially in varied data sets.
Bingo.
So there's the problem. It homogenizes the data somewhat.
So David Weinberger, you know David Weinberger, co-author of the Clutrian Manifesto.
Yeah.
He has a new book coming out, and I got the galleys coming out in May. But I'll talk about more when it comes out, but it's brilliant. And as is David always. And it's called Everyday Chaos. Pre-order it now.
We'll have him on. Carson, make a note because I'd love to get him on triangulation.
But he talks about how what's really happening here is that in a world of machine learning and A/B tests and stuff, the correlations that come along have no explanation, fit no law, make no sense. The data just tells you this is how this disorganized, crazy world of ours operates in a way we didn't know before. And that frustrates the hell out of us human beings because we thought that we could reduce things to laws. I mean, laws of nature kind of laws. And we can and
well,
we can
also because we want
things.
A narrative.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm reading another book. Ooh, this is really interesting. See, I just happen to have it. Called, I can't remember what it's called. I can't read it. How History Gets Things Wrong.
Ooh.
The Neuroscience of Our Addiction to Stories.
Yes.
I'll talk about that another day.
I love that idea.
It is because it says that we have a theory of mind. Because when we want to figure out when the other person on the savannah is going to get that half an antelope that was eaten by the lion before the lion gets back, we're figuring out what other people are going to do in this empathetic way. And that is hardwired into us in ways that he argues. He's a philosopher of science. The author is one Alex Rosenberg.
You mean George Washington didn't chop down the cherry tree?
The problem is we so want narrative.
Yeah.
We so want stories. We want to understand the motives.
He says narrative history is always, always wrong. It's wrong. Not just incomplete or inaccurate, but deeply wrong.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I'm halfway through, so I can't legitimately summarize it yet, but it's absolutely fascinating. So yes, Stacey, narrative is the root. Storytelling is the root of our problems.
Well, no.
That doesn't go,
it is not.
That doesn't
it is,
go over
it
where,
the
very
root
well
of
in
our
journalism.
Disconnect. It's the root of our disconnect with machine learning or, quote, data-driven everything. I think we're just telling ourselves a big lie.
It's hard for us to admit this, though, yeah. Because what is our job, Stacey, Jeff, Leo?
To explain everything.
Storytelling. We reduce all of the complexity surrounding us into understandable, intelligible stories.
We in media. Yeah, this is not a popular stance of mine in a journalism school.
This is why I don't say I'm a writer, because I think my job is to explain the way things work. And a lot of times I have a really hard time finding the compelling story. I call it the dead baby. The dead baby lead that gets the story wide adoption in the audience. And it makes me sad. So I totally believe this.
Yeah, but wait a minute, though. I don't think you're addressing the fundamental issue, which is that inevitably the story misrepresents the facts because they can't be reduced.
That's what I write about. I write about like engineering and tech, and I always talk to people, and I'm like explaining the trade-off between this and that. And those are conversations. Those are things people don't want to read. Basically, this is why like nobody reads my stuff.
Or you need to make your stories more compelling.
I do.
I'm wonky.
I also got a new history of
stereotyping and lithography today at a used bookstore here in Boston. And what fascinates me about it is you get into a narrative. Oh, that's how it was invented. It could have been this. Then it was that. This is how it happened. Ooh, that's what we do.
Remember that wonderful TV show? Remember that wonderful TV show, Connections?
Yes.
No. Who was the guy?
What is
the
lithography when it's not in semiconductor manufacturing?
Well, it was painting on rocks and then pressing the rock on paper.
Right. Oh, okay. It is what it is in semiconductor manufacturing.
Yeah, it's exactly the same.
I was legitimately
it's silk screening. Yeah.
It's etching.
Right. Yeah.
It's etching. Yeah. Okay.
It's exactly the same.
I feel the need for a commercial.
So, okay, good. Because I actually have the need to do a commercial, but.
That was the thing.
I loved James Burke and I loved Connections, but it was the thing that kind of always bothered me, which everything was so pat. You know, it all fit together and oh, wow. And you go and you get this great endorphin rush because it all makes sense. And I think absolutely that's a sign that you don't understand that this story is wrong because it doesn't all make sense. It's a freaking nightmare. A mishmash.
In the world. So, wait. I'm sorry. I'm going to just. If you go to my Medium feed, I don't want you to read the post, but I wrote a post about media education. There's a block quote in there from David Weinberger.
Okay.
Do me a favor and just go to that block quote.
Okay. Can I do it after the ad?
Yeah, sure, you can.
Then we'll pick up. We'll pick up.
A really
the,
boring.
Stay tuned for our block quote.
Stay tuned for a block quote. At least it's not Casper Weinberger. At least it's David. Our show today brought to you by. Cashfly, give your users the seamless online experience you get. You know, the other day I was doing a Cashfly ad and somebody said, yeah, it's true. And whenever I want a Twit podcast, I'm going to get in the car, I'm going to leave, and only have a few minutes, I always get a Twit podcast because it always seems to download like that. Other podcasts, sometimes I'll be waiting minutes or longer to get it. That's Cashfly. I know it has nothing to do with us. We use Cashfly's CDN, Content Delivery Network, to speed content to you. It is the fastest, up to 10 times faster than just having it on a server, up to 30% faster than other big name CDNs. It's our secret weapon, Cashfly. We've been on Cashfly for more than a decade. Every month, our listeners and viewers download petabytes of data from Cashfly with never a problem. Because the Cashfly servers are near you, there are many of them. And by the way, because there are many of them, it's got a 100% SLA. Not 5 nines, not 6 nines, 100%. They guarantee the best user experience for all your customers, no matter where they are, no matter what device they're on. And you can, you know, you can say a lot of things, but I honestly think one of the keys to success for us has been to make it easy and fast for you to get the shows. I don't want anything to get in the way. And CashFly is our secret weapon. CashFly CDN delivers rich media content, applications, podcasts, whatever it is. And you get the benefit because not only is it faster, you pay less. CashFly works with you to get your bill to a year based on yearly usage trends. So spikes don't bother you. You know, a lot of times people are always logging into their CDN to make sure that they don't exceed the cap for the month or the week. You don't have to worry about that. No billing spikes. They'll tailor a plan to your needs based on yearly trends. That's why on average, customers who switch to CashFly save more than 20%. So faster, less expensive. And right now you can find out exactly how much faster and how much less expensive it would be just for your particular application by going to twit.cashfly.com. They'll give you a detailed analysis of your current bill, your usage trends, and they'll say exactly how much you could save. No pressure, just great information. twit.cashfly.com. You don't want to get calls at 3 in the morning, the servers are down, and you want your customers to say what our customer said in the chat room, which was great. Yeah, I always download Twit first because I know it's going to come in plenty of time for me to go to work. Twit.cashfly.com. Thank you, CashFly. All right. Did you find the Medium post? I can look for it if you didn't.
I found the Medium post. I've got it. All right.
No, I'm asking Karsten because I want to show it. Oh. I want to show it. I'll go to it here.
You're a better reader than
What's
I
the name of the post?
Media education.
I see it right here.
Can't
okay.
Wait to dig into that one, can you?
Yeah. So listen first, champion diversity, death to the mass.
Yeah, so just skip down to the
This is
one.
Really you, Jeff. This is you in a nutshell. Service over product. Service is our ethic. Be responsible stewards.
That's why I'm in Boston right now, yes.
Reach across disciplines. This is all good. Here's the pull quote.
So there's the block quote from David Weinberger.
Deep learning's algorithms. Can I read it in a voice like that? Deep learning's algorithms work because they capture better than any human can the complexity, fluidity, and even beauty of a universe in which everything affects everything else all at once. As we will see, machine learning is just one of many tools and strategies that have been increasingly bringing us face to face with the incomprehensible intricacy. I was doing so good. With the incomprehensible intricacy of our everyday world. But this benefit comes at a price. We need to give up our insistence on always understanding our world and how things happen in it. That's scary because that means the AI is going to know exactly. more than we do.
It does.
Yes.
And it's always been the case. We fooled ourselves all these years thinking we could tell the story of the universe, and we couldn't. We were wrong, and now the AI is going to prove how we're wrong, and we're going to hate it, and moral panic will ensue. Well, that was a conversation stopper.
Oh, I'm just going to give up then. So what is our role? Like, what is our role in all this? We're just the dumb humans.
No,
our role is to look at outcomes. Our role is to say not why, but what is happening. And then when you see outcomes that don't make sense or are not optimal, recognize that those are coming from a place of either a lack of certain kinds of data or because your society is fundamentally structured that way. And if you want to change it and not automate that into the data, you're going to have to go back and address those.
Yeah, well,
issues.
I'll give you an example because there is an actual real world example. There aren't a lot of them yet. AIs, you know, a lot of what's called AI, it's just, you know, a nice program. But AlphaZero is a good example. This is the, kind of the final generation of computers designed to play Go. AlphaZero taught itself, by the way. It was given the rules of the game, but no positions, no instructions, no evaluations. They just said, here's the rule of Go, Shogi, and chess. Go learn how to play well. In 4 hours, AlphaZero, not with any of the rules or stories the humans gave it. See, that's the problem. Humans didn't give it any stories. It made up its own story. It got better than anybody else at these games. In fact, it beat AlphaGo, the previous world champion of Go that beat Lee Sedol, 128 games to nothing. But here's the point. Humans look at what AlphaZero does on Go, and they're stunned. they're stunned. This is looking at the outcome, Stacey. They go, that is, because if you looked at the outcome of Deep Blue, the chess machine that beat Kasparov, it was very mechanical. So, you say, that's ugly. That's an ugly move.
It is, yeah.
But not AlphaZero. You look at that, and I don't know Go well enough to know, but Go Masters, great Go players will look at it and say, that is incredibly creative. That is a genius move. That is not ugly. That is beautiful.
Yeah, that's like a. It's kind of like.
Go ahead, let Stacey go, and then you go.
There you go.
In Ender's Game, when Ender realized you could, when fighting in space.
No spoilers. Oh, okay. Yes, up is down, left is right.
Yes. So we have told ourselves a story about like moving through the world, and he just upended that. And that's kind of the shift that's going to happen as we adapt to having machines.
Won't we just turn it into a different story?
Yeah. Well, that's how we perceive the world.
In other words,
I don't
misunderstand
think that's
bad.
I mean, that's where we're wrong.
Yeah, we're wrong. We're children who have said, well, because my mommy disappeared behind her hands, she doesn't exist. Oh, she does. Oh, she doesn't. Oh, she does. We're as children.
Well, wait. You want to get crazy metaphysical?
Let me get my Marley poster. Go ahead.
I'm just saying, like right now, even with AI, what we understand is what's physically happening and what's visible to us. Those are the problems we're giving it now.
Yeah.
But eventually, with better compute power, with a better understanding of the, like, let's say quantum level of the way the world works, we're going to actually be able to see more. So in a way, we are like kids because we don't have the tools today to actually look behind us. Yes. And our stories will adapt.
In an ideal world, I agree. I would love to agree with all of that. And I think that you live in a slightly different world because you don't explain human behavior. You explain machines and how they operate, which does get you closer to that. But we still live in a world of moral panic. So we have the Momo story, and people will believe it immediately because they have a belief system and they think it's based on fact, and it's not. And we're not the kids aren't having Skittles parties. And but there's the alternative. Kellyanne Conway was right. There are alternative facts.
there's a picture of Momo. I just trigger warning. There's a picture of Momo. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
So I'm just saying. So yes, but we'll still misinterpret them. We may have facts. And what Weinberger's saying is, we'll be looking for some explanation.
People have always misinterpreted these things.
It's not there to be found.
People will find what's really happening. There are scientists. There are people who are engineers. I mean, yes, there are great swaths of the population who do not view the world that way and do make narratives. But there are people who actually want to understand what's happening.
Great. So only the smart people will be around.
No, everybody, I mean.
And they're going to take advantage of us. Dumb people.
This smacks of elitism is what, like, this anti-elitism or whatever it is.
It is anti-elitism. I don't want the machines to become smart and then only a few people on it, like string theory, okay? I grant you, string theory is not a good story because no one can tell it. And apparently the five people who understand it make sense to them, but I've talked to many of them, like Michio Kaku, they cannot explain it. To a normal human, there's just no way. It's math. You got to look at the math. Don't understand the math? Well, sorry for you. Too bad for you.
You're out.
Only five of us can. Isn't that nice? So is that what the world's going to be? Is that there are going to be a five people and then artificial intelligence and the rest of us are just going to...
You're presuming that there'll be five people. Part of what David's kind of saying is that for certain things that are happening, the data will tell you this is what happens and there is no explanation. And you're going to drive yourself
nuts. What is the human role then? What is the human role in that?
To make queso.
That's a good question.
To make queso.
I mean, that's a... No, no.
The
human role is to interpret...
With roti and
queso.
No,
it's to interpret and stand in between the the AI-driven outcomes and what we as people decide we want to have happen.
Our job is to make the rules. Yeah, it's to make the rules.
It's not just to make the rules.
But I'm watching that happen, and Europeans are making really bad rules right now, and the Americans will next.
Not laws. Not laws. This is about if you automate something.
We have to say what the outcome. We have to say what outcome we want, right? We say.
Right, and we have to tell it to the machine in the way that the machine can understand.
So just like when you're teaching AlphaZero to play Go, all you're saying is, these are the rules. This is what winning looks like. Figure it out.
Yeah.
Same thing. We want to cure cancer. Okay. So this is the data we know. This is the goal we want. We can't figure it out. Can you? And the machine
but
says,
yeah.
You have
to be really careful. Because right now you could say eliminate cancer cells and the machine may be like, oh.
Okay, can do that.
I could totally do that if I kill a person. And that's not a,
well,
we
you
find it funny,
write good
but it's
rules.
Not an illogical step.
No, but we would obviously so you have to, that write a better rule than that.
Well, there's countless examples of people telling computers to do something.
Mostly they're in Star Trek.
Think they want.
Yeah.
No, there's actually a Tumblr or a blog that grabs these. There's actually a Google spreadsheet that has.
Oh, that's funny.
Have you not seen that spreadsheet?
No, what is it? Bad.
It's a spreadsheet of
bad
like
logic.
It's like when you ask ask an AI to do something, but you just weren't really clear on what you wanted. And
so
it's
this,
quite hilarious.
This is actually an interesting question because this actually, Harari talks about this in 21 Lessons for the 21st Century. And one of the things he says is this is actually a great symbiosis. Because we can't understand the massive complexity of the world, but AI perhaps can, our job will be to set the goals, set the agenda, say this is what we want, this is where we want to go. And we can argue that. That's politics. That's where you say, no, I want to have clean air, but but we should have growth, whatever. You argue that. Once, as a polity, you decide, okay, these are our rules, then you give it to the AI, you let the AI do it. But then the question becomes, and the challenge, the scary part of this is, what if AI develops mind? What if AI develops will? Because and this is the science fiction thing, and then says, okay, that was a nice idea, but I think I want to do this instead.
It falls apart before that, Leo, when AI tells you to close all the coal plants and the coal voters get revved up by a
politician.
And as soon as human beings enter, it's messed up.
Absolutely. But the AI can come up with the right answer. And Harari says, you know, what's interesting is there is no evidence that AI leads to consciousness or mind or will. We don't even know what causes will or mind. We don't know what love looks like. There's no functional MRI for love. So you don't. This is kind of a moot question. There's no evidence that just you're going to make an AI that's smarter and smarter and smarter, and suddenly it's going to gain.
No,
will.
An AI also can't solve. It can predict. It can find patterns and predict. It can't solve.
I disagree.
It can propose things.
No,
I disagree.
Solves. No, reinforcement learning teaches a computer how to solve problems.
When you win a Go game, you solve the game.
Yeah. It is
right,
solving problems.
When you get into a complex
the way it does
system
it
like
is
the Earth.
It's complex to us. Maybe not to the AI. So weather prediction.
Well,
let's talk about weather.
It also depends on the data we've given it. Yeah,
yeah. But let's talk about weather. Let's talk about weather. It's completely theoretically feasible. Weather is a chaotic system.
Yes.
So it's hard to understand, and it may not be predictable. But to the degree that it is predictable, I think maybe chaotic merely means.
Well, that's what I just said. It can predict eventually.
So there are chaotic systems. If there are chaotic systems, and I guess there are, you'll never solve those. But there are plenty of non-chaotic systems, and maybe it turns out weather is deterministic. It's just we can't get all the data points, and so
humans
we don't know.
Humans are always chaotic, thus Weinberger's title.
Humans are a problem.
Everyday chaos.
Humans are the problem.
Yes.
I'll grant you that. But here's the good news. The AI's never going to figure that out.
Well, I don't know. Elon's
what about the change log?
It's time for...
the Google Change Log.
Bum, bum, bum. Podcasters, rejoice. The Google Podcast app is getting better. It's maturing into a viable option for avid listeners, says John Fingus and Engadget. It really has always been pretty rudimentary. In fact, I didn't realize, but you didn't used to be able to search for individual episodes. Now you can. So it used to be you could only search for This Week in Google. You couldn't search for Leitung Zischrecht episode of Google. Now you can. So
this and Google will even correct your spelling.
I hope so. Yes, thank goodness. And pronunciation. Not fully rolled out, but rolling out. So look for a new version on Android of the Google Podcast.
The other thing, if I may throw in on that, Leo,
yes,
just related, which is relevant to you, is that Google is also going to start including sound in search results.
Yay.
No.
Yay.
Yay. No?
Well, so links like, to sound.
They're not auto-playing sound?
Oh, please, no.
No.
Okay.
They're
here's what I want.
So you can find
I want the part of This Week in Google where Stacey Higginbotham said her queso recipe. And it searches it and finds it, and then it has a little play button, and you and it instead of just a link to it, you can play it.
And then you're disaggregated. Nobody listens to the whole show. Listen to that, but that's
can of Rotel.
Well, yeah, there you go. You might find multiple results. yes, and one hopes, and apparently this is planned. Podcast in general search results because they're not right now. Right?
Yes.
That'd be really
no,
nice.
They're not. And that drives me nuts because it means I have to write a whole story if I want my stuff.
That's right. You need a text adjunct. And we never got around to doing that. Google, this is a Stacey. Google Assistant has added support for smart heaters, air fresheners, and fireplaces.
So it'll be warm.
Oh, good. Oh, that is good.
Not malicious. Yeah.
Yes. Air fresheners can be turned on and off. Modes can be adjusted. Fireplaces can be turned on and off. Mm-hmm. Of
as
course,
you start sweating,
can you dim them?
It'll spray you.
Yeah. So you're going to start seeing heaters that say they support Google Home. The iFlame.
That would be the HomeKit version.
House
of that
burns down is going to be trouble.
Yeah. There's a smart air freshener that works with Alexa. Soon it will work with Google too.
I stink.
That's exactly.
Okay. I can fix exactly that. I'm very smart. I can fix anything.
Huge.
One of the first connected air fresheners was actually linked and part of the Works with Nest program. Procter & Gamble. Procter & Gamble did a Febreze air freshener device, and it was tied
what was
into
the
Nest.
Capitalist
so
conspiracy.
This
to make
this
you
was
go
actually
the
before.
Product you don't even need.
This was before Madam A had a smart home capability. So this was 2014, 2015. And what it did is, actually, it was 2015, CES timeframe. And when your air freshener went and it spit out some air freshener, your Nest could turn on so it would blow it around the house. I'm not kidding.
Oh, my.
That is fascinating.
And disturbing. But I don't believe
in
those because
they're
gross.
And turn on the Rotimatic. So you have fresh roti for breakfast.
So I will tell you, I tell Madam A to turn on or to preheat my June all the time.
Do you?
It's wonderful. Yeah.
Geez, it smells like a big wet dog in here.
Android can now wake you up with YouTube Music or Pandora. Spotify was added last year, now Pandora. And by the way, I want to say, peripherally, Pandora now has Twit. So you can, in fact, wake up to This Week in Google if you wish.
You can have Jeff yelling, Technopanic!
Wake up!
Technopanic!
Google Maps.
Yelling, no, Jeff, no!
Google Maps has added the blight of a nation, Lime Scooters, to its maps. Now in 80 cities. Did you read the article? Fascinating article. That analyzed how long these publicly rentable scooters last, and how uneconomical this whole thing is. Guy estimated.
Oh, I read something like that. But yeah, I don't know if it was, and how often they get thrown into lakes.
Well, that's another problem.
In the lakes, which is a real problem because it pollutes the lake.
This is from Quartz. How do you like that Quartz app? By the way, you like that app? I can't figure out if I like it or not. It's kind of be like a social network a little bit. Yeah, they've been advertising like crazy.
I hate apps the web for content.
Shared scooters don't last long. Allison Griswold did a data analysis in Louisville. Yeah. 100. So basically, she found out the average lifespan of a scooter is 28.8 days.
Jeez.
It costs them $551 to buy the scooter. they also have to spend a significant amount of money with the city to license the scooter. In fact, they're like $2,000 for a probationary license, additional $1,000 to receive a full license, $50 fee per allotted dockless vehicle, daily $1 fee, and $100 per designated parking area. So basically, here it is, Louisville Scooternomics, everybody. You've been waiting for this. A scooter generates $3.77 per ride, deducting per ride costs, charging, repairs, credit card fees, customer support, insurance. That's 95 cents. So a scooter makes about $3.32 in net revenue a day, minus the city's $1 fee. Lime is making $2 a day. Unfortunately,
the scooter needs to be replaced.
Yes, the scooter only lasts 28 days, so it generates about $67, but they're paying $360 for it. So they're losing $293 a scooter.
Math is hard.
This does not surprise me at all.
No. I mean, we know Uber's lost money for years, right? Anyway, so I don't know how I got to that from Pandora, but we did.
I was like, change
I'm waiting for the story that says how unhealthy people are using scooters rather than just walking.
Actually, the big problem with scooters is helmets. And there are quite a few scooter injuries. And that's going to be,
Austin, all the drunk people run around on their scooters, and holy cow, it is not good.
I almost got hit by them in San Jose.
You know what I do like, though? When we were in Santa Monica, we used, Uber has bicycles, electric bicycles. And so it's like City Bike, but they're electrified. And that was really cool. And a little, I feel a little safer. Google.
Electric aided or
they're electric aided. They're electric aided.
So you imagine you're exercising.
Yeah, you get a little exercise. I love my electric bikes.
Your legs are pedaling a little.
I love electric bikes. They're the best thing ever. Google's new Chromebook App Hub showcases the best classroom applications and ideas. They announced it at South by EDU, which is going on today. Actually, yesterday.
LeVar Burton was talking a few hours ago.
And
I know.
Are you going to South by later?
I am.
Good. Say hi to Amy.
That should be my thing, is to do my talk.
Oh, yes, save it.
Ooh.
And that's the Google changelog. Good news, the Save the Internet Act has been introduced in Congress. Doesn't have a chance in hell, but at least it could pass the House of Representatives.
This legislation also brings the power of the Internet to every corner of the country.
Hallelujah! This, of course, is in response to the FCC eliminating net neutrality last year.
Does it really have provisions in it for expanding broadband?
Yeah. It's good. You want me to read it?
Well, what the heck? It's not going to pass, so you might as well throw it in.
Yeah, throw it in.
Well, no. Then I'm not going to. I'm not even. I don't cover that anymore.
Yeah. 3 pages that will restore net neutrality.
It's only 3 pages.
Yeah, doesn't do a whole lot.
I thought it was a real bill.
No. I'm just a bill on Capitol Hill. did you see this? I love this. I'm going to just run through a couple of things, and then we're going to get to your picks of the week. A really interesting question. The Atlantic raised this. It turns out we can now analyze DNA from old envelopes. When people lick stamps and lick envelopes, they in effect seal genetic material in that DNA. MyHeritage soon is going to be offering DNA testing on old stamps and envelopes.
Not cool.
Okay, that's what I was thinking you might say. Because grandma can't give permission.
Right. You can't give your consent.
You find a 1,000-year-old man coming out of the ice, the defrosted permafrost, and are you allowed to take his DNA?
Well, so what's interesting here and worth talking about, no, it's not because I'm hungry and it's almost time for me to go, but is the idea that when we see these law enforcement officials, grabbing DNA, they're grabbing the DNA from the suspect, but they're finding the likely candidate based on DNA from their relatives.
Oh.
So I think there was a stat that says within the next 5 to 10 years, 90% of white Europeans in the country will be identifiable based on their relationships with other people, basically.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. It was a New York Times article. New York Times did a lovely story about this because there was just another case, you know, and so
we do know that
year-olds, probably not.
Legally, dead people have no rights. Legally.
Right. It's but again, this is where Jeff gets upset. This is the inference. Well, this is inference based on this.
The inference, yes it is. Yes it is.
But that's not a machine learning case.
And finally, I don't know what the status of Articles 11 and 13 are, the EU's new intellectual property.
Still rolling ahead, looking for likely passage.
There is some good defense, though, going on from Germany, which says Article 13 violates GDPR.
I love that one.
What are you going to do? Not anything to say about that. I don't know. If you live in the EU and you want to keep getting twit, you might want to write your member of parliament and say, please don't pass this. Because we would almost certainly have to turn off twit in the EU. I don't know what else we would do. We'd violate the law, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what we would do. We'd use Facebook.
No more cruises for you.
I know. I make all my money off of Europe. Hey, I got something you can only get in the U.S. right now. Aftershocks special tech bundle. I love the Trex. Have you seen these? Actually, anybody who exercises will love these. These are bone conduction headphones. They're super comfortable. They don't go in your ear. That's why if you're bicycling or running and you want to make sure you hear traffic when you're driving, you want to hear emergency vehicles, you could still listen. Nice fidelity. They sound great. You can listen to the music. You can tune in without tuning out. Aftershocks. They use a patented bone conduction technology. And I was skeptical. I thought, oh, come on. But then I wore them and I said, wow. In fact, now I wear them all the time because you can also use them as a Bluetooth headset. So this is the easiest, most comfortable way for me to take calls. I love it. They rest gently outside your ear and produce sound by sending mini vibrations through your cheekbones to your inner ear, bypassing your eardrum. They're really comfortable, really lightweight. That back of the band, which holds them in place, is lightweight titanium. It's very flexible. It's durable. It's portable. The phone calls sound great. The music sounds great. I listen to audiobooks all day. Premium pitch guarantees a premium audio experience with wide dynamic range and rich bass. Wireless Bluetooth 4.1 connectivity, multi-point pairing too, which is really nice. You compare it to all your phones. And I do that because, in fact, I even use this with my Mac. I'll be sitting at my Mac and I'll do calls like this. They're unobtrusive. They sound great. People can hear you clearly. They charge fast, 1.5 hours, and they give you up to 6 hours of continuous music and calls on a single charge, 10-day standby time. I keep my Aftershocks right there next to the computer or in my backpack because they're great for listening when I'm out and about. They're safer for driving and any outdoor activities because they allow you to hear what's going on around you, like, I don't know, emergency vehicles or that car coming up behind you. We have a very nice deal, but again, it's U.S. only. It's the Aftershocks Tech Bundle. You get the Trex Air, a pop socket for your phone, a large portable storage case, a portable power bank, and a travel tumbler that is an insulator as well. And all of that $50 off if you use the offer code TWIG at twig.aftershocks.com. Aftershocks is spelled with a Z, AFTERSHOKZ or Z.com. Twig.aftershocks.com. $50 off the tech bundle if you're in the U.S. But even if you're not in the U.S., you're going to love these. They sell them worldwide. These are fantastic. I love my Aftershocks, and I use them all the time. And now, because she's hungry, ladies.
You know, I got a question for you first. Real quick question. My father is about as deaf as a doornail now, and he gets in trouble in the building he lives in because he turns the TV up too loud. The bozo upstairs, anyway. Bone induction, from what I'm looking at here, reading,
he'd hear better.
Be a solution.
Yeah,
he'd hear better.
Yeah, it depends what his deafness comes from.
What the cause
do
is.
Do a new
right?
Hira.
What's a new Hira?
It is a PSAP. What's that stand for? Hold on. I'm going to tell you. It's a personal sound amplification product device.
Oh, PSAP. These are the IQ Buds. Yeah, I tried these.
Yeah.
I am not a fan.
Those are pretty good.
No. I wear hearing aids, though, understand. Okay. So, honestly, the best thing to do is to get your dad hearing aids. I did that. Oh, I got some for him.
He has them.
But he doesn't like them. Does he have modern ones?
No. Yeah, he does.
Okay.
Bluetooth would be a mile too far.
Yeah.
But they're never quite good enough. It's just, just going to only correct so much.
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah, maybe try bone conductance. The problem is those are Bluetooth, and that means they wouldn't be great for watching TV because of latency. But, it might be adequate for him.
The way he watches TV, he wouldn't notice.
He wouldn't care. I use my hearing aids to watch TV, but also to listen to books and so forth. But the sound is not full fidelity. I use these new Resounds, which are better than the older hearing aids. They're really good. They're also really expensive.
Have you tried the Starkey Livios hearing aids?
Yeah, I've had the Livios, and I have now the Resounds, which compete with the Livios. The Livios do something extra, which is they can do your heart rate and stuff like that. I think this is going to be...
What about the Ergos? They just got $52 million in funding this week, and they were like...
I don't... See, what this is because next year or the year after, I can't remember, you're going to be able to buy hearing aids over the counter. So all these companies... 2020. All these companies are jumping into this market. Basically, these are companies that make headphones or headphone-like devices.
I have a story coming out in IEEE on this exact topic.
Yeah. These are interesting. I asked my audiologist about them. I haven't actually tried the Ergos. I tried the IQ Buds. He said the real problem is battery life. They don't, because they're so tiny, they don't have big batteries, and so they don't last all that long. But it might be, it's interesting. Again, these are about a third the cost of real hearing aids, which are extraordinarily expensive. These are only $2,000. This is going to be an exploding category next year. And I think probably buying hearing aids now, if you don't need them terribly, would probably be smart to wait till next year when you can get them over the counter. And there'll be a lot of competition. And like the Livio, they'll be doing a lot more than just amplifying audio. Yeah, try. You know what? I'll see if Aftershocks will send you one for your dad.
Oh, well, he won't be able to. The Bluetooth. I have to be there to make it work.
Yeah. You'd like them, though. They're great. Yeah. Time for Stacy's pick of the week.
Oh, I'm just dropping some. So I had an actual pick for you, but then I was like, hey, guys, it's going to be South By, and if any of you are going to be in the area, I have two places if you want to hang out with Stacy. Leo, are you not coming?
No, we were hoping to, but it fell through.
Okay. So you won't see Leo, but I am at a party on, there's going to be a link. It is the Smart Home VIP Cocktail Party, where I'm hosting a panel.
Ooh.
It is Friday at 5 p.m., and it is at 720 Brazos.
Are your fears of smart home tech warranted?
That is a different one.
Oh, okay.
And then if you have a badge... This is the non-party. This is a talk. I'm interviewing the CEO of August, which was bought by Asa Abloy. And we are going to actually have some hardcore conversations about data usage, business models, and what we really can expect.
Nice.
And that is on Tuesday at 12:30.
I wish I were going.
So that's if you want to see me in person.
I would really like to see you in person. I wish I were going, but I'm not. Thank you, Stacy. Did you want to mention the other stuff, too? You can.
Okay. My friend Tim Carmody, who was at Wired and The Verge. Yeah, he's got a new newsletter out. It's the Amazon Chronicles.
Ooh.
And it's really good, you guys. There's a free and then there's a paid version, and he understands technology, but he actually understands how people tell stories about themselves and the things they like.
Nice.
And so this is all about everything Amazon. So if you're into that, check it out. Even if you're not into that, you should check it out because Amazon is everywhere in your life, and he talks about.
And they're going to take over the world, yes. Silently, quietly, behind the scenes, they're taking over the world. You were all worrying about Facebook.
Yeah, actually, Amazon, Facebook's our savior now. They're coming to rescue us from Bezos.
How quickly the world turns.
So his headline on this week's post there, this week's newsletter that just went out is, you would like this, Jeff. Amazon is a marketplace for information, or how disinformation and double dealing ruin what makes Amazon work.
Oh, I like it.
And
I like it.
Yes, you're going
to
like this.
What's the URL to find it again?
AmazonChronicles.substack.com.
Okay.
Jeff, you got a number for us?
Yes, I do. 26 is the number. So I met a really interesting academic from University of British Columbia named Heidi Dvorak, who has a book coming out about Germany trying to control media through the First and Second World Wars. But so happens, an article she wrote was used as the basis of a thread that I thought was wonderful by Icelandic tweeter Asta Helgadottir, goes through from 1850 on all the times that mainly German publishers tried to use copyright to protect news. Oh,
this is so funny. Year by year.
1850. It's perfect. German press publishers wanted copyright of news because the newly arrived technology, the telegrams, ruining their business model. Rejected. 1886, they tried again in Bern. Rejected. In 1908, they tried to limit the possibility of reproduction of news. Rejected. 1908, won a distinction as a creative production and non-creative information and news regards to copyright. Rejected. And on and on and on and on until we get to now, Articles 11 and 13, they just keep trying and trying and trying again to hide behind copyright for protectionism for their dying industry.
How do you say news theft in German?
Or in Icelandic.
That's great. Good thread. 26 the number because there's 26 tweets from Astafish.
So Helgadottir is a former member of the Icelandic parliament.
Oh.
I think she's a pirate, I'm guessing.
I was going to say she's pirate party. At ASTA underscore fish. I was going to make...
The thread has been translated into German as well.
I was going to make the Rodimatic be my pick of the week, but that's out. Maybe
I ruined it for you.
Maybe I'll make the S10 and the new Galaxy Buds a pick, except I don't know enough about them yet to say anything. I've just opened the box, but I will have more information about these in shows to come. We'll, I'm sure, get a review on Hot Hands on Tech, our review show. Thank you so much for being here, Stacey Higginbotham. She does a newsletter on IoT. The eyes of Texas are upon her. I don't know why that's in your lower third.
I was going to say, what is happening here?
Go to Stacey on IoT.com. You can also listen to her fine podcast with about Chromebooks, Kevin Toefel. The IoT podcast is available wherever finer podcasts are aggregated. Thank you, Stacey.
Oh, that's, you know what? I had some feedback from Kevin.
What did he say?
He said, we need more Chrome and Chromebooks on this show.
We do.
I couldn't agree more.
We do.
In fact, I'm having problems lately with mine. So I need Gina used to solve Jeff's problems. We need Kevin to be on the show to solve Jeff's problems.
Actually,
well, I'm sure you could ask him to come on for a segment.
One of the big stories is that Microsoft has given up on Edge and is going to start using Chromium as the engine in its Edge browser. And we've already started to get screenshots of the development version of it. That's a big story for Chrome.
And Microsoft
there was an active security flaw in the wild and you should update your Chrome right now.
Is there?
I believe so. I think it was on our rundown, too, wasn't it?
Was it? Oh, I missed it. Well,
I didn't see that rundown.
There you go. Bottom line, update your Chrome. Why are you listening to us when you could be updating your Chrome? Jeff Jarvis, he is the director of the Townite Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. He's also a Leonard Tow professor for journalistic innovation there, and we are always thrilled to have him on the show. Of course, a former TV Guide critic as well. I love that.
And a blogger.
You will never live that down, Jeff.
Oh, my God. Thank you all for being here. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, about 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern. Now, we're going to set our clocks forward on Sunday. So this is always a difficult time for us because while it's still going to be 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, it is now going to be 20:30 UTC. So as we spring forward, our time goes back. For those of you doing the UTC calculations, we're at UTC minus 7 for next week's episode and all the episodes this summer. If you can't watch live, and by the way, that stream is at twit.tv/live. You can always get on-demand versions of the show at twit.tv/twig. That's our website. Or subscribe in your favorite podcaster, including, yes, Pandora now, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Pandora, Stitcher, Spotify, Slacker, all of the, you know, Pocket Casts. Just subscribe. That way you'll have every show the minute it's available. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.